Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
When Bing Crosby's White Christmas debuted in 1942, no one imagined that a holiday song would top the charts year after year after year. One of the best-selling singles ever released, it remains on rotation throughout every holiday season. Over the years, other favorites have been added to America's playlist, including Elvis Presley's Blue Christmas, the King Cole Trio's The Christmas Song, Gene Autry's Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and Elmo and Patsy's Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer, just to name a few. Viewing American holiday values through the filter of familiar Christmas songs, Ronald Langford examines popular culture, consumerism, and the dynamics of the traditional American family. He surveys more than 75 years of songs and reveals that the modern American Christmas has carried a complex and sometimes contradictory set of meanings. Ronald Langford is the author of the new book, Sleigh Rides, Jingle Bells, and Silent Nights, A Cultural History of American Christmas Songs. And it's a great pleasure to have him join us live on the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning, and happy holidays, Jeff.
And happy holidays to you. It's a pleasure to have you join us. How did you come to this particular idea of looking at our culture and really a cultural history of the songs that we use to celebrate the holiday?
Probably about 4 years ago, I started collecting holiday music. And one thing that I noticed was that holiday songs were very different than most of our popular music. Most music is popular for a short time, and it's almost disposable in that way. And Christmas songs, if they are ones we really love, can come back to the charts in successive years. And with our favorite ones, we are still listening to them. White Christmas goes back to 42, Winter Wonderland to 34. So that's like 70 or 80 years that we have held on to these songs. So my idea was, if we have held on to these songs so long, they must mean a lot to us, and I wanted to find out what that was.
Is there a template? I mean, do you think there if it works in one song, it'll work in another? I mean, it in any artistic pursuit, it's impossible to replicate and know what it is that stays with people. But when you look at holiday music, and to realize that we can become so immersed in that music for 1 month, pretty much from Thanksgiving to Christmas, that of what these particular songs have in common?
Well, there would always be differences, but I think probably the biggest thing they had in common, especially these songs that we've held on to from the 40s and the 50s, is that they are, I think, culturally fairly conservative. They are very much founded in family. But as you mentioned, we do play these songs a lot, and so I think there has to be some spark of originality, some melody that sticks with us for us to be able to, you know, play them continually for a month every year, you know, for as long as we have.
And what do you, we mentioned White Christmas at the beginning, but what do you think there is about a song like that that is so... that becomes, not only the song becomes a part, but we think of that we want a white Christmas. Will we have a white Christmas? Will there be snow? Will we have a white Christmas? I mean, it's part of, as you indicate in the book, it's part of not only our artistic and cultural history, but also just how we deal with the holidays and think of them.
Well, I think White Christmas, you know, it's hard to tell which comes first, White Christmas or how we picture Christmas. It seems to so embody things that are important to us, being home. Everybody wants to be home. And, of course, when the song first came out in 42, I mean, there were millions of Americans overseas during, you know, with World War II, and they were obviously thinking of home. But I think that home has always been something that's very important to Christmas, and White Christmas is just one of those songs, and all these classic songs, I'll Be Home for Christmas, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, that seem to just capture, you know, how we feel about the holiday.
Right. And there's a lot about, there's a lot about the weather. I mean, White Christmas, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Maybe it's cold outside. There's a lot of we're looking at cold weather, snow, and what we think of a holiday season to look like.
Yeah, it's funny in a way because obviously there's a lot of places in the United States that do not have a White Christmas. And so it sounds like you're always talking, these songs are, you know, based in Vermont or someplace like that. And so it is kind of interesting that we've come to certain ideas or cliches of what Christmas should look like when obviously that would not apply in, you know, Florida, Hawaii, and different places like that.
You talk in the book about singing the Christmas blues and converting these conventional Christmas experiences into popular song. It may have seemed like a stretch, but it worked, didn't it?
Yes, you listen to Blue Christmas. I mean, whether you listen to the original earlier version by Ernest Tubb, it's much more country, or the later rocking version by Elvis, these songs for a lot of people captured, I think, a certain feeling around Christmas. We want to be home, we want to be with family, and we want to have that Merry Christmas. But for some people who have suffered from, whether it's a romantic breakup or something else not going right, it can be a very sad time of year, I think, because everybody has that ideal. You should be home and with family. And if you're not, then something's wrong. And when you take a song like Blue Christmas or Pretty Paper, a Willie Nelson song, I think that pretty much defines how those people feel left out of the experience.
When I mentioned in the introduction, you talk about it in the book, of Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer. There is certainly also satire included in our Christmas repertoire and our holiday song repertoire of what we play, and that's a great example of that. What's interesting about that song is its pedigree. I mean, it's not done by a Willie Nelson or a Bing Crosby or a Mel Torme.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it seems like the opposite. I have called it like the opposite of White Christmas or the anti-White Christmas. Here is a family in Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer that you could not imagine wanting to come home to Christmas, you know. And so it's very much, I think, from a different era. Having said that, I think that satire, even if you go back to much earlier, 47 or 48, with Spike Jones and, you know, All I Want for Christmas is My Two Front Teeth, there's a sense that sometimes everything, Christmas becomes too much, whether it's the money or the time, you know, or too much family. And I think we are uncomfortable, you know, directly criticizing family, home. But if we have a satirical song like Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer, we can sort of laugh at everything becoming too much, and we're more comfortable with that.
You do briefly mention in the book, but I think of Stan Freberg's Green Christmas, which was very popular in its day, but has not survived. Also, probably because it's 12 minutes long or something. It's very
long and rather involved. But there does seem to be this tradition, too, again, that you can maybe criticize Christmas. Everybody could say, like, well, Christmas is too much. We spend too much money, and we kind of draw from, you know, Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. You're supposed to remember others. You're supposed to give to charity. And so I think we listen to these songs and say, yes, we should be, you know, we should remember charity. We should remember others this time of year. We should remember that it's not about just buying presents.
Right.
And we sort of see that as, I think, a lot of times as being critical of others, but not necessarily of ourselves. We think maybe we can hold that in check a little better.
You draw a lot of parallels to these songs and our cultural history through Christmas songs, but also through Christmas movies.
Yeah, it's fun, especially I think early on we have several classics. One of the things I think is really funny about White Christmas is that we all complain, everybody complains. Christmas comes too early every year. We see decorations out in stores in September. And the first time most Americans heard White Christmas would have been in the movie Holiday Inn in 1942, and it was released in August of 1942.
Mm.
And so it was like, as this kind of Christmas song category, and the movies were getting started, people weren't quite sure when to release these. Another one is Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, which is sung by Judy Garland at a pivotal moment in Meet Me in St. Louis. Another song that I did not write about was sung by Silver Bells, was sung by Bob Hope in The Lemon Drop Kid in 1951. So movies very much helped to get Christmas music started in the 40s.
And we were talking about novelty a moment ago, but I mean, sometimes there's just those things that you don't understand, but like, how does Dominic the Donkey come? You know, I mean, how does... Why does that still exist?
Well, you know, I've had a couple of people ask me, too, about I Want a Hippopotamus.
Well, now, see, I like that one.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fun song, and they're fun. And I think, too, I mean, maybe they're not satirical, and maybe they're aimed for kids, but it's, you know, they're just silly fun, I guess, some of them. You know, people love them. My wife loves the Hippopotamus song.
Yeah.
And so, but, yeah, I don't know. It's... Some of those, it seems strange that they would have ever become hits to begin with. But again, one like I Want a Hippopotamus for Christmas, it seems like it's grown more popular over time for some reason.
Absolutely. And there seems to be, I guess the question I have is to, in wrapping up, about what you think the future is for Christmas songs, because we seem to have a lot of pop artists who do different things, but I don't know if there's really anything new.
It seems to me that we've become much more fragmented, even since the 60s, as music listeners. So you could take a great song like Merle Haggard's If We Make It Through December. It still is a country song. Unlike White Christmas or some of these earlier songs, they don't seem to cross over as much. And so we have more of niche markets, it seems like, for Christmas songs, which is good as far as, you know, some people aren't too crazy about Christmas music to begin with, say, alternative music listeners. And so now they can have their own alternative Christmas albums. The other thing, though, that I think that is kind of interesting is, like, more in the mainstream. You take Diana Krall's album from a few years back, very popular album, and basically it seems to do the same thing that Ella Fitzgerald did with A Very Swinging Christmas back in the early 60s. So it seems like people just keep repeating traditions, and it seems to work.
The book is Sleigh Rides, Jingle Bells, and Silent Nights. It's published by the University Press of Florida. Ronald Langford, I thank you so much for being with us and sharing with us this morning. Have a wonderful Christmas season, and I thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you. Merry Christmas, Joe.
Merry Christmas to you. Again, you can find out more by going to our website, wamc.org/roundtable. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.